This is the Paula Gordon Show, Conversations with People at the Leading Edge. We are delighted that one of those people is Frank Delaney. Bill Russell, you were talking about Tibet.
Well,
we were talking about Ireland. We were talking in the context of both Tipperary and Ireland. And I want to add one more piece to this conversation about freedom. Going back to what I'm currently writing the website for Alexandra Fuller's conversation with us, so I'm really thinking deeply about that. She says that in Wyoming, which is being devastated by our greed, by an addiction to energy, by the oil and gas companies coming and ruining for centuries to come the land that is Wyoming. And she says in Wyoming, there still is, it is indistinguishable, the land and the people.
Yes.
And as Bill was reading about Tibet and I was thinking about Wyoming, I was also able to put that template against Ireland.
Oh, absolutely.
The land and the people. That is somewhat less true in the United States because we are so, peripatetic and there's so much land and so few of us are actually rooted in the land. The rural part is, we are now way over the urbanization. But all of these things are relevant when you're talking about democracy.
The thing that startled me here when I came to live here 6 years ago, I've been coming over and back for 30 years. And I've always loved coming here. I love Americans. I love the fact that you can see the trace elements of so many cultures in this culture. You know, it's like a mineral discovery. And it's marvelous. I'm astounded by your timidity. Astounded by it.
Timidity?
Timidity.
Here we have all this bravado.
Timidity. If the French farmers have a dispute with the government over road tax or something like that, they block the freeways with their tractors. I've been caught in them many times. I was caught in one which they called Disputation de Pamplemousse because there was a row over grapefruit. So they blocked the highway from Paris to Marseille at several points with their tractors. They held up traffic for days, for days. I'm watching the gas prices go up here.
To the profit only of the gas companies.
By the hour.
Well, and the
by the hour. I'm watching various other things. Let me give you another example. When the French had hostages in Beirut, every French news bulletin at nighttime on all the channels there began, after the introductory music and the titles, began with a photograph of the hostages and the names and the number of days in captivity, and then the news bulletin began. In other words, they shamed the government into doing something. In the United States, at the moment, there is a serious absence of people power. You're not pushing back enough. You're not saying, hey, this is my right here. Now, I see it in small towns. I see it wonderfully in Connecticut, where my neighbors are terrifically feisty, and if something is going through they don't like, we're all in there, and we're arguing about it and fighting about it. But I don't see it nationally, and here's my question to you. How often do you see, coming out of Washington, legislation that you think is for your good, or that you think is even about you, for a second? Now, in Ireland, your hands are very much closer to the levers of power. You know, you damn well let them know this is not good enough. America can do that, but it has been doing it.
Don't you have to factor in the media in this? Because our corporate media simply won't tell us these things.
That's part of it. I think this goes back to Ireland and South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You didn't have the pleasure of going to school growing up in America, so you don't know that America perfected democracy.
You don't know this.
This will come as a surprise to you.
And to most of the world.
And to most of the world, but not to us.
Yeah.
We were taught that basically item, and we had reached the apotheosis of all that was conceivable with respect to democracy. We'd won.
And it was done.
So I think
the Constitution is wonderful, but it needs to be updated all the time.
Absolutely. But once you get to that state of complacency,
mm-hmm.
and not only that, but people will still tell you, they'll talk about the pendulum of history, it always swings back. Well, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it falls and just keeps swinging.
Yeah.
I mean, we forget that, but we literally believe that it will fix itself, that we have created a form of government, perfected a form of government. And this is, I think, the degenerate myth that we're operating on. that essentially does not require any active intervention. It's running on automatic pilot. So all we have to do is cash our paychecks, enjoy the good life, and this magical formulation will allow us to live.
It's not like that, Bill.
Really?
Flash!
In Ireland once.
You're in the news business, aren't you?
In Ireland once, they tried to get rid of the proportional representation system in exchange for the single vote. It meant that the ruling party at that particular time, the majority party, would have been in power forever. So they twinned it with a presidential election. It had to be a referendum because the constitution has to change. They twinned it on the ballot paper with a presidential election to vote back into presidential office the great godfather of the Irish state, Eamon de Valera, for his second term of office as president. He was retired. He was out to grass. It's an honorary situation. So on the ballot paper, they said, vote yes to making Mr. de Valera president for another 7 years, and vote yes to the abolition of proportional representation. There was no possibility. You either voted yes, or you left it blank. So you ticked the box for the psychological implication was you ticked the box for President de Valera, and you ticked the box automatically. De Valera was voted back, as he should have been, as president for another 7 years. He was then in his 80s, by a huge majority. By an even bigger majority, they rejected the other measure.
By not voting for it?
By not voting for it. By an even bigger majority, they said, we're not going to be fooled by this. We like our voting system, thank you. Now clear off. That's how sophisticated the Irish electorate was. We have a ballot paper where you vote
down the
paper.
How did you make that happen? Was it neighbors talking to neighbors?
I think people are very hip to their, they love their own political system. If I have a local, if I'm living in Ireland, my mother, when the ballot papers were published in the paper beforehand, she would go down that list. There were 15 candidates. She would go down that list and see who had done the most good in the area. And she would vote according 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because the votes are transferable. When one man's elected, his surplus is transferred and divided among the others and so on and so forth. It's an incredibly fair system. And it produces really good public servants because people know if they don't perform, they're voted off. And she would go down and say, well, I haven't seen him for 2 years. He's not getting my vote. Anyway, she'd vote 1, 2, 3. She'd give everybody a vote, and she'd write 1 or 2 or 15. She might, number 15 might get the first vote, and so on and so forth. And that system worked better. And therefore, if the Prime Minister wasn't performing, he was out. Here, you have a president for 4 years, and that's it. You can't do anything about it. You can't. You're locked for 4 years. 6 years in the Senate, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's a different system. And I think that all of these things, I think, we will see changing in our lifetime because the world will force it.
One of the, it was Darth Kern's Goodwin who pointed out, a good Irishman.
She's wonderful. Yeah.
That what she discovered in writing about Lincoln, the standard question in America was it slavery or was it union?
That he was fighting for in the Civil War.
Mm. The Civil War, I mean, that was the motivator, the driver behind. And what she said
for
she
Lincoln.
Came to after years of research.
10 of them.
Which he was very diligent about. Was that it really was neither. It was his deep, profound belief that people could govern themselves.
And that he told us that in the Gettysburg Address.
And it's all there. I mean, that neat little succinct statement. Yeah. But that governing process in a non-static environment, and we all talk about how much the world is changing, the definition of the social relationship between and among us is right there in the way we govern ourselves.
Absolutely.
And we should expect that to change, which means...
But it should be mutating all the time.
Precisely.
It's an organism.
It should be evolving.
Absolutely.
Evolution applies.
Absolutely.
Co-evolving.
Yeah. Well, yes.
It is interesting to me. I have a favorite part, having only read 2 of your books. I'm sorry, you've got 20, but my time is somewhat constrained.
There have only been 3 books published here.
Well, then I'm only a third off.
So you're 2/3 throughout the
story. Thank you.
You're doing very well.
At the beginning of Ireland, you go through and say, and this is right on point, and give a lyrical introduction to the land itself, the physical ejection, I guess I'm looking for, of the land mass out of the core that is
the
planet.
Yeah, yeah.
And you tell me that it's always on fire down there.
Yeah.
And you give me a context that is deeply moving both emotionally and physically, and there is a sense of continuity from the very moment that this landmass comes out of the molten core, and it's as if you have the Irish, I now you get to be the Irish for me, it's as if the Irish had a sense of the wholeness of that, and the fluidity, and how things do change, where the mindset that Bill is describing is very doctrinaire, it is cut and dried, it is still pre-Darwinian, and it doesn't account for the fact that there's always change.
There's always change. It's so interesting that you say this, because when I wrote this book, I realized it would also have to be read in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh,
and?
Because, as Dr. Johnson said, the Irish are a very fair people. They never speak well of one another.
Thank you, Dr. Johnson. Yeah.
And George III said, should you ever seek to roast an Irishman upon a spit, you will always find another Irishman ready to turn it.
Dear. And anyway, so?
So I thought that, you will concede that Ireland, a novel, is a flamboyant book. It is flamboyant verbally. It is flamboyant intellectually, it is flamboyant emotionally, and that's the way it is. It is what it is. And therefore I was afraid that when it was read in Ireland, oh boy. And of course, yes, there were the usual axes grinding, you could hear them in the background. A very interesting thing has happened since. I meet Irish people whom I really respect, who have never said anything in public about this book, and there's been a lot of debate about it in Ireland, as you can imagine. But who very quietly said to me, you've got it absolutely right. That's exactly how I felt. A couple of weeks ago, I had the great, great privilege of meeting a former colleague of mine whom I haven't met for 35 years, probably the Irishman I most respect. He's a very quiet man. He was a wonderful, wonderful radio and theatre producer. He founded the Irish Folk Theatre. He's a Catholic priest, lives down in the southwest, lived a very quiet life. A man who taught me a huge amount about communication.
Will you tell us his name?
His name is Father Pat Ahern, A-H-E-R-N. He's a remarkable figure to me. Very, very important to me. And somebody had just given him this book. And I said to him, did you like it? Heart in my mouth, he said. I did. That's all I need to know. Therefore, here's the point. That's the long answer to the point you're making, Paula. I can't be alone in feeling this immense fiery power under my feet as a child and as an adult. It seems to me when you go to Ireland, you are so connected to the land because there's so little of it. And recently, in this novel I've just finished, I was looking for a really very important metaphor to summarize why one character was so awfully the way he is. And I remembered something as a child that I'd heard, a mythological effect called hungry grass. And hungry grass is a kind of folktale phenomenon whereby you're walking across the fields and suddenly you're crossing a patch of earth and you feel an extraordinary degree of the pangs of famishment. You're famished, you're suddenly hungry. And the theory was that you are crossing a famine grave. That this is where people who died from no food were buried. Now, you see what has happened? The actual mythology of the creation of the country is taken in the 19th century and updated. So the myth goes on. So what we have that has been such a huge power to us and a huge example to us, because after all, we are unique in that history is usually written by the winners. In Ireland, it was written better by the losers. It goes on, and that's where we got our power from, our psychic power, this tiny island. America only has to find that within itself to become once again the greatest nation on earth.
Frank Delaney has told you. Now we will listen more when we return.